All right, it's 95.9 The Fox, Sunday, April 7th at the Ridgefield Playhouse. If you enjoyed Making a Murderer, the Dahmer series, if you're like my ex-girlfriend and you like to listen to murder podcasts before you go to sleep, you got to check this out, all right? It's called The Psychology of Serial Killers, and it's featuring a clinical psychologist and criminal expert, Dr. Rachel Tolles. It's a live show, the Ridgefield Playhouse, and I'm talking to Dr. Tolles right now. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to talk to you, and I'm a little bit scared because I'm a total chicken about this stuff. Like,
You should be very scared.
You know what? I did a little research on you, and the kind of stuff you cover is wild. Like, all right, so a lot of people have a fascination and a curiosity with serial killers, right? Of course, you know this better than anybody.
Yeah.
But this is more than just a curiosity for you. I mean, you had a real experience with this type of violence at a young age. Do you mind telling that story?
That's
is that okay
right.
that I ask about it?
Well, that story actually I tell. It's not. I mean, there was violence, but it was actually a young girl getting hit by a car, and it just happened right in front of my eyes. So if you can imagine how tall a 5-year-old is, it was an eye shot. And so after that, I just became utterly fascinated by death and anything in the world that might cause death. And I kind of talk about this at the beginning of the show, and then it just led me down this path to some of the most notorious murderers of our time. And I can't explain exactly why, except that the more I would hear about these types of quote-unquote boogeymen, the more intrigued I found myself, and the more I needed to know how and why.
I mean, that's kind of it, right? It's the how and why. Is that the primary reason that we're fascinated by serial killers and stuff like that? Is it just something, are we just curious about something that's so outside the realm of our understanding?
Well, there's a lot of answers to that question. So people always want to know why so many women specifically love true crime. And some people would say, well, because we're the prey versus the predators.
Sure.
We're the ones that have to scan the environment to make sure, you know, we're safe, et cetera, while men are scanning the environments for sexual conquests. But, you know, I think it's deeper than that. I think it has more to do with the fact that we're all human. And somewhere deep down, we know that had our circumstances been a bit different or a lot different, we might have become one as well.
So that is fascinating to me. And I was going to ask you about this later, but let's jump into it now. Because
is it really because,
you know, you hear about all of these, you know, narcissism is a huge buzzword right now, but also, sociopaths, like sociopaths. But are you saying that it's not inherently, you know, something that you're born with, a personality trait you're born with, but that everybody has the capacity to be a serial killer?
That is exactly what I'm suggesting, and that is exactly what I believe. I don't think, from what there's brain scans now, they're showing like what happens when people are in very traumatic childhood. So so in the show, I lay out my 9-factor formula. It shows the 9 things that happen in every serial killer's life that make them a serial killer. And had they occurred in our lives, we may have become one as well. And so for a long time, they show these brain scans, which I talk about in the show, of the psychopathic brain. And we know that there are a couple areas, the amygdala and the prefrontal cortex, that are connected. And they're like, oh, it's just they look different. So clearly they were born with this kind of brain. And it's like, well, no, if you actually study what happens in trauma and this thing called limbic hijacking that happens to the brain, you realize, oh, okay, so when the amygdala is constantly lit up because of traumatic environments like going to war or having a very traumatic childhood, the prefrontal cortex shuts down, and with enough of that, your brain gets burnt out. So I believe that's a big part of why the amygdala is smaller in people who later become psychopaths, because they've been so traumatized.
Right. Well, I guess that's the fascinating part, because we talk about nurture versus nature. Which is it? And we like to think that we don't have the internal capacity for this kind of, you know, just extreme acts of violence. But apparently we might.
Well, think about war.
Right.
Like, think about, you know, when people have certain dictators and then like the entire country suddenly becomes these people. Are they all just innately evil, just that group of people? Or is there something in humans that makes them suddenly these switches go off and they're like, yeah, I guess I could just target these people because somebody's telling me they're bad. That's why we have to listen to ourselves versus dictators or other people outside of us to get to know our truths before we act on these things. Because a lot of people are just, they find themselves morally lazy and they prefer other people to tell them what to do and to what to believe and how to behave.
Morally lazy. I love that phrase. I want to ask, and I, you know, without obviously without giving away what I'm sure is a big part of your show, you mentioned nine events that happen to people that can bring out these, you know, very violent tendencies in them. Obviously, I'm not going to ask you for all nine because that's crazy, but can I get one or two?
I'll tell you one, and okay. It's, you know, because I'm also working on the factors that make a mass shooter, which is a very different set of factors,
yeah.
But it's still a whole different psychology, because I think that's what we need to be focusing on now, given just what's going on in our country and, you know, in the world, but really our country. We have the most mass shooters anywhere.
Yes.
And in both cases, one of the factors is the same, which is bullying.
Okay.
Severe bullying. Believe it or not, bullying causes post-traumatic stress disorder. We don't talk about it enough, but you've got a kid who, certainly in the case of serial killers, is coming from a home life that is fraught with violence, abuse, trauma. So they're being bullied by their parents. They then go to school for hopefully a little relief that, like, the whole world's not bad, right? And then all of a sudden they get targeted for being insecure and different and weird, and now all of a sudden the whole world's hostile. And so if you're viewing the whole world through that lens, of course you're going to behave in a certain way to say, F you.
Yeah.
I'm tired of this. You hate me, then I hate you.
This is so fascinating, and I'm deviating so far from the questions I was going to ask you, because this is amazing.
Like it.
It sounds like you know that there is to a degree a certain amount of empathy that you do feel for these
absolutely.
People. Obviously,
absolutely,
right?
Yes.
Sure.
Compassion. You know, funny enough, empathy is a word, you know, they use in our field, but empathy, a lot of people don't realize this, it's a value neutral term. It just means the ability to read people. So you could have, like, a lot of people who are considered psychopathic are very manipulative, and the only way you can be manipulative is if you have the ability to read people, because then you know what they want, and then you know what to give them. So that's cognitive empathy. So actually, technically, empathy is maybe not what you're referring to, but compassion. I have compassion for these types of people.
That's exactly right. Yes.
For all people.
Yeah.
Yes.
Could you? All right. So, I mean, just having spent your life studying these people, could you identify somebody, like, just by having a conversation with them? Like, let's say, like, you know, just walk into a room. There's five people in the room. One of them's a serial killer. Do you, like, how likely do you think that you could, like, pick that person out? Or is it that hard to tell?
You know, this is what I've come to find. I feel that language, believe it or not, I think we create words to F ourselves up. So language, talking to people, maybe not, it's not going to maybe give me the sense of what I think actually talking, the ability to talk. Like, we think that humans believe that the most sophisticated version of language is the ability to talk, and animals can't do it, but we can. And I think it's actually the opposite. I think it's nonverbal communication that's the most sophisticated. And I think that being in the room with five people, if one of them is a true, you know, a killer or psychopath, I'd be able to tell by just sitting with them and getting the feeling of, but we got to get still. I always say your body doesn't lie. You got to get still enough in your body to be able to sense. Your spidey senses will tell you if you listen enough. But in order to listen, you got to shut up and not talk, and actually ideally not have them talk, and get quiet enough to sense. And your body will tell you. You know, you hear people say, "I've got the hairs on the back of my neck." It's like, that's how you know.
The chills,
so
yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
That's absolutely fascinating. This is so cool.
I
mean, I can see why the show has been a success. You know what I mean? Because this is it's a different way, particularly in terms of, you know, having, and not empathy, but compassion, to use, you know, I think the more correct term that you did, for
Thank
people
you.
Who are capable of committing, like, you know, heinous acts of violence. I don't know. I mean, it's just fascinating to me.
A lot of it also is having compassion for yourself, because I believe all relationships are mirrors, and every relationship is a mirror to the relationship you have with yourself. And so if you think about it that way, you know, I think it was one of the shows, there was a woman in the audience who was very angry, and early on, and she was like, "You think I should have empathy for these people?"
Right.
And then by the end of the show, she came up to me teary-eyed, and she said, "I just can't stop thinking about killing my ex-husband." So what she ultimately admitted was that what she was angry at was the part of herself that wanted to kill. And that's what we need to be looking at.
Wow. I absolutely love that, and I'm so excited to go see this show. April 7th, by the way, Ridgefield Playhouse, The Psychology of Serial Killers. I'm talking to Dr. Rachel Tolles. So we've heard of Jeffrey Dahmer. We've heard of John Wayne Gacy, Ted Bundy. Who's a serial killer who the media didn't cover as much that you think
there's
that we should
so
know
many.
About?
There's so many.
Really?
I mean, okay, so the most prolific serial killer in the U.S. is Sam Little, and a lot of people haven't heard of him, partly because he's black.
Okay.
And we know that, you know, the media doesn't cover black victims, and he made sure that all of his victims were women of color and sex workers at that, because they are so discardable by society. And he even said at one point in an interview, "You think I'm dumb enough to go into a white neighborhood and steal a little white girl? Like, I'd get caught. Are you kidding me? Like, I'm going to go after the people that I, you know." And but that's just, you know, we don't hear a lot about black serial killers, for example, because of this issue.
That's interesting. I mean, so tell me more about Sam Little, because I mean, like you said, this is a new name to me. This is not someone who I'm familiar
Sam
with.
Sam Little has thought to have been killed over 90 women.
My God!
So, you know, if you think about John Gacy killed 33. You know, Ted Bundy at least confessed to 36, but then he later said that there may have been a lot more. But you know, so I think that's like, yeah, those two plus the Zodiac killer all combined, you're still getting more with Sam Little. As far as kills. And so he was a drifter. He went from state to state. That's one of the reasons he didn't get caught. He never stayed in one place. So he killed in a lot of different states. And, you know, what we find in a lot of serial killers, though, once they get caught and they're behind bars, they actually, when they're not destroying, they're creating. And this guy, like a lot of them, like Ed Kemper, you know, he got into ceramics, but Sam Little started painting and drawing the images of these victims, and they were gorgeous paintings.
Really?
He was incredibly talented, and it's amazing what when you're not using your energy for destruction, but you're using it for creation, what you can do. And that's one of the messages I'm trying to get across, certainly to people who are like teachers that come to the show and like, what can I do? I notice that some of these kids are a little bit going off the, you know, going off the deep end. And then it's just like, well, if you could just sit with them and start focusing on the things that they can do to channel their frustrations and their anger that, you know, they're feeling, and rightly so.
Yeah. I mean, all right. So this is, this is really something else. All right. So tell me about the, because you know what, like I actually, and like I told you at the beginning of this interview, like I'm a total chicken. So I expected to come in here. I'm like, all right, I'm going to hear some like wild, scary, like disturbing stuff. And I'm actually like noticing myself feeling, you know, a little bit more, I don't know. It's like a cathartic experience talking to you about, you know, about people
well,
like this. Like,
that you're going to come to a show. That's,
right.
That's the real hope here.
I mean, you know, I can't say it enough. Ridgefield Playhouse, April 7th, Sunday. But you know, I mean, like that woman you mentioned earlier on the show, though, it really is kind of, you know, if you're able to acknowledge these kind of dark feelings within yourself, even if it's through the mirror of these extreme examples, it's anyway, listen, I could go on, and I don't have you forever. What I want to know is, tell me about the format of the show. I mean, we've touched on so many of the topics, so many of the things that you're going to introduce, but like, what is this, you know, are we talking one woman, you know, play? Do we have like visual aids? What do we got?
So there's going to be some visuals, nothing, no crime scene. So nothing gory like that, but it'll be, so the first act will be me giving the full lecture covering, you know, my serial killer formula, how a serial killer becomes a serial killer, and then using one of the prolific serial killers as an example to start with, and then applying it to a few others. And then the second act is a live Q&A where they get to ask any questions, and I'm up there with my wonderful moderator, Carrie Ipama, and we talk about, they basically ask, she asks the questions that they write on these cards, and I answer them.
That's fantastic. All right. Well, listen, before I let you go, one last question. You know, you are someone who has gotten so deep into the mind of some of the most extreme examples of, you know, of killers and serial killers in our society. You talked earlier about, you know, how people, particularly women, have to always kind of be on the lookout to keep themselves safe from somebody like this, or even somebody to a less extreme event. What I'm trying to ask is, what are the best ways to avoid being a victim? How do we not get murdered?
Don't try to figure it out in your head. Like I was saying earlier, it's all about listening to your body. Your body doesn't lie. So the more connected you are to your body and listening to that, that's the best way that you're going to know if you're in the presence of someone who is dangerous. And then listen to that ideally and honor that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Dr. Rachel Tolles, clinical psychologist, criminal expert. Her show, The Psychology of Serial Killers, is going to be coming to the Ridgefield Playhouse April 7th. And this was so different and so much. I mean, listen, I thought this was going to be a cool conversation. This was an even cooler conversation than I thought it was going to be.
Well, I'm so glad, John. Well, I hope you come to a show. I really do. And if you do, please introduce yourself.
I will. I will. Absolutely. Yeah. I'll see you April 7th. This is great. Thank you,
Dr.
Rachel.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you. Okay. See you then.